on. I'll try it. I'll have to try doing this sometime when we're not actually
recording.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome back on your
Indeed.
Short hiatus.
What was it, 2 episodes you guys did without me?
I think it was 1.
I think it was only 1.
Yeah.
But 1 is sort of like a month. Because
yeah.
We are bi-weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you were on, and then I released that episode, and then I just released the episode that me and Rob did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you feeling better?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's just one of those things that never really totally turned into anything, thankfully. It was just kind of a couple days there where I was feeling a bit run down, and so I took it easy, so try to prevent. So who knows? I mean, it may have been a touch of things, something. It might have been the weather.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the COVID.
I mean, you never know. It could have been.
Did
like,
you lose your taste?
No, nothing like that.
Or smell.
No, I didn't have a fever or anything, so.
Yeah, the
if it
this
was
week,
that,
this
it was
week
a very
at work
mild
we had a
case.
Scared. We were in a meeting and then we got an email that said, "You could all go work at home." I was like, "What does that mean?"
Like, oh, maybe? Why is this?
And then the guy that was on the meeting said that he has it. So we were all on a call, but. He said that he was at work the day before, and all of a sudden he was drinking his coffee and he couldn't taste anything. Like, he couldn't smell it, he couldn't taste it. And then I had another coworker that works on the East Coast, and he was at his daughter's house, and his son-in-law came down stairs, and he said, "You all should leave." And he goes, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "I just changed the baby's diaper and I can't smell." So
oh.
I guess that's like a quality that one of the symptoms and things that happens to a lot of people is they just lose their senses.
I've in the past month and a half, like more than 1 or 2 people that I directly know now have been, you know, positive and
yeah.
On their, you know, either recovered or on their way to recovering. No serious cases, thank
yeah.
God. But it's, I mean, and no danger. It's all like work, you know, colleagues and stuff like that. But, you know, we've been working from home for a year now. So it's not like I have anything to worry about. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like it's really.
I just don't like that they don't, like, I understand the privacy laws and they can't tell you what. But I'd sure like to know, because in the case that I was in, I wasn't near that person, but I sure as hell was near a person that was with that guy.
Yeah, and you don't know.
Yeah.
The thing is so contagious and it takes so long for you to start showing symptoms, even if you do.
Chris, when you were here, did we go to the zoo, or was it just Garden of the Gods? And I can't remember.
No, we didn't. We went to Garden of the Gods. So.
Yeah, I remember Garden of the Gods, but I didn't know if we went to the zoo. Man, that zoo is so hilly. I can't believe it. Like I'm sore today because the incline is, man, it's at least. There's some inclines that are like at 50 degree angle up. It's crazy.
Wow.
Well,
yeah,
it's in Cheyenne Mountain. It just like half of the thing is easy because you're going downhill, and then half of it's like uphill. And then you, in order to go see the bears, you have to like either take an elevator, which with COVID, there's no way in hell I'm getting in an elevator. But I did the stairs, but man, there's a lot of stairs you climb. That's at least, I don't know, it's like 5 flights.
Gives you a workout.
Yeah, it's quite the workout.
Yeah, you guys got a lot of that elevation stuff going on out there.
Yeah. But yeah, we did the zoo yesterday.
Yeah, it looked. I only saw the couple pictures, I think, that Barb posted, but it looked nice. Looks like
Yep.
you got a nice zoo out there.
Yeah, it's a nice zoo. Things are really, really spread out. I mean, the only thing that we didn't see yesterday was the primates because the primates are indoors, and there was like a huge line, and it would have taken like at least an hour to get in going at the pace because they like let people in as soon as people leave.
Yeah.
And with the primates, they just had a some of the monkeys just had a baby, so like everybody wants to see the baby.
Was there anything in particular that motivated you guys to go yesterday?
The weather. It was the
It's
first time
nice
we
out
had a
there.
break in the weather. Yeah, it was like 50 degrees.
Come and see the baby.
Yeah, that's what motivated us is Barb wanted to get out of the house.
It's nice though. It's nice to be able to, especially these times, be able to actually get out of the house for a little bit.
Yeah. But it is a nice zoo. Like I couldn't remember if we went or not. I think we went with Micah and Claire. I know we did the Garden of the Gods with them too. And did we do the Pike's Peak with you or no?
No, I think we talked about it. We went up,
Oh, we
we
went
went
under
in,
Palmer Park.
we went to one, there was a neighborhood where you and I took a picture inside the arcade with a
Oh,
Superman.
Manitou Springs. We went to Manitou.
Yeah, we like walked up the hill. There's lots of shops and
Yeah.
restaurants and an arcade and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's the arcade with the games that I grew up with. It's got like Space Invaders and Asteroids and Donkey Kong and Tron.
Yeah, hard to find an arcade nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it I don't know how it's doing during the COVID.
Yeah.
I know the biggest hit here are restaurants. There's been a lot of restaurant closures, but
Yeah.
mostly affected were the buffets, like those big buffets and stuff. Those were annihilated out here. I
I
don't
could
even
see
think one
that.
exists anymore. I mean, there might be one or two that are starting to open up, but some of them just never came back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've had quite a few restaurants that have closed, closed their doors permanently.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't really. I guess I don't tend to pay attention to buffets because we don't ever go to them, but
No,
I can't really think of. I know there's like that Old Country buffet that's on Transit, but I haven't really paid attention to if.
we had a place called Golden Corral, and those are all gone. Those were
Yeah, I don't think we
big,
had any
big
of those
ones. And
around
then we
here, did
have some
we?
other ones. We had a Ultimate Buffet, which was Chinese. That one is just opening up again.
I'm not a real
Yeah.
big buffet fan.
We don't go to buffets that often.
I think we have some Chinese buffets around.
I
Because
think the
they're
last time
everywhere.
I've been to a buffet was, man, it's been about 7 years ago.
Yeah, I can't even remember myself.
Me neither. I think maybe when we did go a while, a few years ago now, not a ton of years ago, but maybe 4 or 5 years ago to the casino up in Niagara Falls on our side. They have a huge like buffet, like one of those big
Yeah.
fancy casino buffets. Yeah,
Yep.
with
That's
my
the only
parents.
time that me and Barb eat at buffets usually is when we go visit the parents.
Yeah.
they want to go to the casino. It's probably hard for my mom and dad because they used to go to the casino like once a week. And so did Barb's mom, for that matter. So
That
there
place we
hasn't been
had,
a hell of a lot of gambling.
yep.
I think the place we had breakfast that time, Rob, I think they closed for good, if
I
I'm
yeah, I
remembering
heard that they were
correctly.
Amy's place. I heard they were closing down, and the last that I read is somebody is interested in buying it.
Okay.
So
That
it is
makes sense.
closed, but it sounds like it may reopen now under a new owner.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That makes
it's
sense. They always did crazy business.
yeah. But it is, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's just there's just so many places like no, I got that Buffalo Roadhouse right near me, and that's permanently shut down now. Just kind of sad.
My mom's got her shots, and my dad has one so far.
That's good.
Mine's reversed. My dad has both, and my mom has one, and I think her second shot is this week.
I think my dad has another week. Yesterday, Harley scared us because, well, she scared me more than Barb, but she got off the couch and it's like she pulled her ankle or something and she just couldn't like put weight on it. But today she's fine. It's like me when I pop my arm out of my socket. I can't function for like 10 seconds until I slam it against the wall. But
Wow.
that's like what happened. And she's done that before, but she hadn't done it in a while.
Yeah.
The last time we took her to get a bath, she was up on one of those like elevated truck things and she jumped down. I was trying to put her down, like lift her, but she jumped down on her own and it was quite high and she had hurt her shoulder and she hadn't hurt it again since, but man, I was like, oh no, I'm not gonna be able to walk her or anything.
Yeah.
But this morning we went for a mile and a half and she was fine.
That's
She
good.
slept it off, gave her some Rimadyl.
Yeah, sometimes they don't know their own limitations. Our dog is crazy like that. And she had a bad knee where the kneecap kept going out of, I think I might have told you guys a while back what happened, but
Dislocated.
yeah, it keeps on like going out of the socket. And you could actually, like, Stacy got really good at being able to put it back in, but like she could take two steps and it might come right out. Like the actual hollow where the
Yeah.
kneecap rests is not deep enough. There's a lot of dogs that can often have that problem. So we ended up having to take her
Surgery.
in for surgery, and then she was great, but now the other one on and off keeps bugging her. So
Yeah.
we took her in for a consultation, and the vet said, if you have a 4-point scale of severity, she's like, she's still at a one. She's like, I wouldn't recommend doing the surgery yet.
Surgery again, yeah.
Yeah, but then it tends to get bad in the winter, and I think because we're not as good at exercising her in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And so then it just starts kind of, once we actually start walking her a lot more, I think it just strengthens the tendons
Yeah.
and kind of holds it in place a little bit
That's
better.
one thing Harley's got going for her. She does like a mile and a half almost every day,
Yeah, that's really
even in the
good.
cold. We
Yeah.
used to go out there if it's 20 degrees or higher.
Something that we should be doing, and
Yeah,
we don't.
there's only one time where I was too cold. She went to go, and she'll tell me like we'll turn the corner and she'll look at me and stop, and she'll just say, "This is ridiculous. Let's go back." Just one question for you, Rob, before we start. Did you get your books for your non-DC books for this past week,
No.
like Berserker, and
No,
I didn't
nothing was
either.
it's just DC. It was the past, it was 2 weeks ago and
Yeah.
last week's of regular of everything non-DC and then only DC for this week.
Yeah, I really want to read Berserker because Matt Kent's been on fire, man. At least for me. He
I
did
haven't read it.
the Fear Case, which I absolutely loved, and then he did Crimson Flower, which I think was amazing. But that
Yeah.
one was artistically amazing, I thought.
As long as we're talking about that type of stuff, I'm still waiting to hear what they're doing with my I don't even know how to pronounce it out loud. ENIAC, I guess.
ENIAC, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I
Mine's stuck in
honestly, the
ENIAC,
characters are not
Anana
good
Mine's
at
stuck in
communication.
Maryland.
But it's been shipped. I have no idea what he what he's doing with ours. Like, and I say ours because Paul Tesnier went with him too. He's just, they're just terrible at communication. They keep saying, you know, I sent something and I said, you know, guys, shipping it, and they're like, no, you know, we actually wanted to ask you, like, do you want each individual book shipped or shipped out monthly? I said, well, probably monthly makes more sense, but for March, this is it, right? I got nothing else. There's no other books coming in March from Bad Idea.
Have you checked out Tfaw to see if they still had any in stock? You could just
It
get it
looks
from
like
there.
I could get one. Everywhere else is those not the
The
first
worst
print ones.
case is you have two and you sell one on eBay for $50.
Why are they going so expensive?
It's insane. The world's insane right now. They're buying digital NBA videos that you can download on YouTube. I don't understand for
I don't
$30.
understand it. I don't understand it.
The world has gone nuts.
Really has. But yeah, I mean, I could, but I replied back, monthly would make more sense, but this is the only monthly books, so what's the plan? That was like Wednesday. No, still no reply.
Well, I already know that like Tfaw lets you like remove stuff, and they've already like locked in tankers and ENIAC 2 and everything, so I can't
That's
remove them
awesome.
anymore.
But that's cool. It's like
But
everything for me
I
is
have the
like
same I
just a Facebook Messenger back and forth. That's
Right.
as official as I've gotten.
Well, I was gonna sit out, but here's what happened with me. So I went with Third Eye, which is in Maryland, like a year and a half ago. I put my order in, they charged my card, and the book's now coming out a year and a half later. But
Right.
to their credit, about 6 months ago, they sent us an email saying, "Hey, we'll tr credit, you know, we'll give your money back because we don't know when it's coming out
Yeah.
because of COVID or whatever." And I said, no, I'll just keep that one in. I only had ENIAC 1 from them. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And that's the one that's shipping first. And in the meantime, Joe, our buddy, told us Tfaw had them. And I was like, wow, I can track this. This is like DCBS. This is what I want to do. So
Yeah.
I went with Tfaw. And then the third thing is Eric of Cowabunga contacted me and said, "We're now a store. Do you want us to have it?" And I said, "Yes." But his replies have been like yours, like,
Which is
"I
strange
can't,
because
I
Eric's
can't, I,
usually
well,
very
I, yeah,
responsive.
very, very." But I think it's because they either don't have them or he doesn't. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about
Yeah.
their books
Like,
yet, so.
I paid for ENIAC 1, like you said, a while back, a long time ago. So I did pay for that, and I have the PayPal receipt that I paid for it, but that was just for the book itself, you know, not with any shipping. So I just it just makes me nervous because I see these crazy prices on eBay, and I
Yeah,
have
and you're
no
like,
idea
I don't want to pay
what I'm
that.
getting.
But
Yeah, I don't know what I'm getting.
it's not only crazy for the first print, which you should get because you committed,
Right.
but
Like you said a year and a half ago.
it was the prices are going crazy for the second print. So it's like that's $20 for the second print. At this point, I don't care as long as I get one first print. So I want one first print, and then if the other two are second print, I don't care.
I totally would agree with that. I'm just afraid now with me buying this a good whatever 16 months ago,
You
I'm
might
finally
be
gonna get a
lost,
response.
or
They're gonna mail it to me, and it's gonna be not the first print. And because I'm going through this, by mail, and they sold all their first prints right in the actual store.
that could be.
That's
You can
yeah,
tell
that's my concern.
because the first print has the white logo, the second print has the black.
Yep. I guess we'll see. Nothing I can do about it. I just would like a response to know when they're planning on shipping it. I don't want to be stiffed on it. I don't think that will happen, but their communication is just not good at all.
Yeah. Well, I think at least 75% of the stores that got Bad Idea are not equipped with like websites and automatic payments and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So it's not smooth with 75% of the stores, and the other 75, they're it's tracked like any other book.
Exactly.
Yeah. But we'll see. Hopefully, I was hoping to have my book yesterday because it said arrival date yesterday, but then I clicked on it and it said, "Oh shit, it's stuck in it and it's stuck in Maryland." So, I don't know. I thought the mail system had gotten better since the administration, because I had ordered the first print of I told you the Deathstroke, Deathlok. I got, the there was a Deathlok first appearance, and I ordered it, and it came fast. And then I wanted to complete the Shadowhawk that I talked about with you, Rob, and that came in like within 2 days of me ordering it. I'm like, holy crap, the mail system must be back. But then this one got stuck. I don't know where it is. But at least I know that the store did its job. They shipped it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Good. Speaking of orders, I do have I did place my order. I think I mentioned to you couple weeks ago, after I
Batman Fortnite, you did?
no.
You are gonna miss out, man.
You know what I bought instead? Flash number 105.
You went big bucks.
It should be coming on Monday. And
Where
I bought
did you
that
get it? Where did you get it from?
worldwidecomics.com. I bought from them a bunch of other times before. That's actually where I got the
Have you been
first couple.
happy with them? Is it
Very
CGC graded or
No,
CGC?
they're not.
Okay.
I'm very happy with them. Just because I live in New York State, I prefer to look for a good site that's outside of New York, because you have to pay tax on secondhand comic books in New York State, reselling comic books.
Yeah.
Like Metropolis Comics is huge, but that's New York City, and there's a couple other ones that are really big, but they're New York City, so it's just a lot of extra money in tax. Whereas Worldwide Comics is in Texas, and so I don't have to pay tax. They're reasonably priced. They have a nice mix of CGC and non-CGC books,
Yeah.
and for these, I wanted non-CGC just because, honestly, it's what I'd be able to afford. And so this is a nice, they're grading it a good slash very good, even up to a VG minus. So that's, yeah, it should be coming maybe tomorrow or Tuesday. And got about three other issues as well. Some older ones prior to
Expensive
issue 200.
ones?
No, the most, well, I mean, they're not cheap,
Well, that one had to
but
be
not like
expensive.
105.
They're
Yeah.
not little birdies.
I mean, the other ones are like, I got like two or three other ones. They were like 70, 60, $70 each.
Wow.
I really appreciate all the time and money you're putting into completing my Flash collection, Rob.
Anytime, Chris. Hey, you know what? I'm certainly going to be dying before you, so we can arrange for something to be in my will.
I don't even know what to say to that.
One, you're younger. Two, you're vegetarian.
Well, now it's recorded, so when you go to claim your Flash 105.
Yeah.
You say, I have verbal evidence right here.
come to the Chris, just come to the funeral. Don't worry that Stacy's sobbing and stuff like that. Just interrupt her and start playing this and say, where's my comic?
It'll be my evidence in the court battle with your children.
I actually did look just for curiosity. I had to look, like, what could I get? Could I get anything of a showcase for? The answer is no.
Yeah, even a poor is expensive.
Yeah, even if it was poor, even if it, like, the coverless, like, I didn't search really closely because as soon as I saw, like, good NVGs were, like, $6,000, I'm like, well, obviously, I'm never going to own those. So I'll just kind of actual Flash run itself.
There's certain comics that, like, you know, it's like, it could have no cover and, you know, someone could have crapped on it and you still can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's pretty much to the point where that one is. But I had a look because I really didn't know. I'm like, if I can find, like you said, Mike, even like something that's in poor condition, if it still had the cover, I mean, that would be cool as hell to have. I don't care. But there's just absolutely no way. There's no way at all.
Yeah, that's... Some things are unattainable, but it's not. I mean, if you look at it this way, you could get like a golden, you know, a Flash archive or whatever, and say I have all the issues, but you know I'm missing 15, and they're all in this archive, so you have everything.
Yeah,
that's the way I look at it. Like, there's no way I'm gonna get an FF number one, but if I have 20 through the whole run, then that's good. That's good enough.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like I have every Flash comic. It's just like those early issues. They're in collected editions.
Yeah. That was my big big purchase of the year. That will do it for me probably for the entire year.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of Ninja Turtles. I never thought I'd be getting Ninja Turtles, but man, I have almost a full run of the first. I'm missing the first five, which are the expensive ones.
You're a big turtle head now.
But I could go like fifth print. You know, like some of them have multiple printings, and they're a little more affordable. But let's kick off some retro. Well, that was retro purchasing.
Yeah, some good retro purchasing.
Yeah.
You guys transitioned your talk from modern to retro.
Yeah, ENIAC to retro.
Is ENIAC what? I didn't understand anything you guys are talking about.
There's a company called Bad Idea. And
yeah,
they
I've
only
heard of them from you guys talking about them on Twitter, and the name of their company just continues to amuse me, because all everyone ever says about them sounds like Bad Ideas.
Yeah, well, it is. Matt,
living up to the name.
For people that are interested in hearing about it, I would recommend Challenger's podcast, because it's hearing all the crap that a retailer has to go through to deal with them. It just seems like a headache. It really does. And one of the Bad Idea stores got kicked out because they broke the rule. You're not supposed to, for 30 days, you're not supposed to raise the price on a book, and I guess they were selling them on through their eBay store for like $50 a shot. And so they got kicked out of the program. But
Yeah,
the
particularly.
company the company the bad thing is they say they're not about that, but they are about that. They're
They're
causing
100% about that.
the scarcity. They're doing it. They're
Well, they picked what? The first
creating.
25 and 50, then, like, I think
Yeah.
over 100
And I think
stores, but
they're
that's worldwide.
I think they're strategically doing it.
I do
I don't
too.
think it's like I think it's on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because by getting people to talk about it and getting investors to look at it, people are looking at it. Sorry
I
about
guess
that, but I
it's
need ice.
yeah. So Chris, they did that. They've been launching for a long time, and I mean, part of the huge delay was definitely the pandemic. But then it turned out, everyone's pre-ordering these books. Well, guess what? They're allotting to the stores like something like 51% of their order, because that's all that they have. The rest are going to be allotted as they don't do second prints. They do not first prints. And it's like, I mean, that's how it's identified. Not first print. It's a different color of the logo. That's pretty much the only thing that, and I guess the re and well, I mean, again, it's a marketing thing, but the other thing is they're not identifying future prints as anything other than not first prints. So that's the reason there's no such thing as a third print, fourth print. You either have a first print or one that's not first print. There's no way to tell
But their
what
marketing
print.
strategy is kind of cool with the not first prints because their idea is to keep those in stock. So let's say if you went and bought issue 4, well, they should have a store should have 1 through 3 in the not first print.
Right, yeah.
So you can
And
just grab one
if
through
you
four
come into
because
the store,
they're not doing digital, which is weird. They're not doing trades.
they're
So
not doing trades.
this is the way they're doing it.
They're set, if the store says I want 100 of these ENIAC number ones, that already locks, because I don't know if it's a 4 issue miniseries or 5 or whatever, but let's say it's 4 issues. That automatically locks the store in for 100 number twos, threes, and fours. There's no separate ordering by issue number. Whatever they ordered for number one is what they're going to get for all the other issues.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it doesn't sound it sounds like they have some good ideas, but like you said, Mike, either some of the things they're doing are intentional, or it sounds like they didn't really anticipate
I
how.
think they're intentional because of Dinesh. Dinesh, if you just like have followed him over the last decade, you'll see what a hardcore collector he is, and he knows rarities. And I think in the back of his head, he knows what he wants to do. And I, they're those guys are smart. I mean, they survived. They sold their company. They sold Valiant. They made
I mean, it
money.
basically is Valiant, Chris. It's the relaunch of Valiant. It's Dinesh who was the main creative person, but what's his name? Simons? I can't remember his first name.
Warren.
Or I wanted to say Walter, and I knew that was wrong. He was the editor in chief at Valiant. He's with them. The marketing guy is with. I mean, it's basically that top team of Valiant, except for Fred Pierce, all went and created Bad Idea together.
And
Interesting.
they're a film studio, though. It's so weird. Dinesh and them took their money that they made from Valiant when they sold it, and he invested in like movie th and Warren's in on it too. So they have like they're producing Jeff Lemire's horror book from Image, and they did Bloodshot.
Yeah, Gideon Falls, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Gideon Falls. So they have like they're doing the Witcher on Netflix. So
Oh, I didn't
they have
know
like
that.
these studios, and they're not just like one studio. They have like three studios, and they're producing stuff. So they have the studios plus bad idea. So they're smart guys. They know what they know what they're doing. I don't think that they would have run into a situation that they didn't already anticipate. And
Yeah,
I think COVID is,
that makes sense.
I think COVID worked to their advantage because collectors have gone like COVID nuts. I mean, we've seen the collectability of Vision and Scarlet Witch stuff has gone through the roof. You wouldn't have seen that before COVID. It's like even Mandalorian, it caused Star Wars books to become unattainable. It became ridiculous. So it's there's a lot of weird shit going on, and it there's no way in hell it's gonna maintain that cost. I mean, there's some books like I want the first Mephisto. That book is not gonna go down, I don't think.
Well, do you think it's gonna level off now that he had
I
nothing
think it's
but
gonna level off, but
I don't want to spoil, but it's like there was like things were all being speculated about the show that didn't necessarily have any basis in reality.
having said that, I think the show was really good. It was like well thought out.
The show is awesome.
It had to do
People
with
saying that it's disappointing because it didn't meet their own speculations that has nothing to do with whether or not it was good.
It was good. There was something that I was disappointed in that I thought they could have exploited better, and that's the X-Men stuff. I thought they could use this show as more of a bridge towards mutants.
Yeah.
And I was hoping for that, like just throw me a nugget. And you kind of did get like a little bit of a nugget, but it sort of turned into something else,
Right.
the one nugget. But it was a good show. It's well worth the thing that was great about the show. It was like Disney Plus is doing it right, and I'll say this: they have people doing water cooler talk every week. I mean, and people don't want to get spoiled, so they'll stay off of Twitter on Fridays, and when they get to watch the show, and they got people discussing it like it's The Office or a big show, like every week that you'd watch it. And they did the same thing with Mandalorian.
Oh,
So
100%. And in 2 weeks we get Winter Soldier and
yeah,
Falcon.
Falcon and Winter Soldier. The thing that was good about WandaVision though is people did not know. Like I'm sure like the Captain America, the Winter Soldier and Falcon series is going to be more like an action-packed thing. But the thing with Vision and Scarlet Witch, it was like a mystery. Like you didn't know what was going to happen. So
No,
everybody
I had
was
no
like
idea. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I loved it. Me and you, we both loved it. But when I watched the first two episodes, I'm like, oh my God, this is nothing like I was expecting.
Yeah. I actually thought the first two episodes were my favorite, but I love retro TV, so I just can't believe how they were able to capture the essence of TV at that time. Like it was near perfect. And they were going decade by decade, and they moved themselves from the 50s all the way until like Malcolm in the Middle and
Modern
Modern
Family.
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, you really, if you ever have a chance to watch WandaVision, you definitely have to watch it, and I would love to know what you think.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It was a neat experiment. I'll give the writers like props because they had everybody they n nobody knew what was going on.
No doubt.
They caused the market to go nuts. I mean, people were buying and buying and buying and buying stuff because they're like, oh, this is gonna happen, this is gonna happen. And some people were disappointed because that something didn't happen.
Right. It was very good.
But let's kick this off. And what, Chris, why don't you tell us what you brought to the show?
Sure. First thing I'll talk about, everything stuff I read was from Hoopla. It appears that DC put out a Richard Dragon Kung Fu
Yes,
Fighter
they
collection.
did. Yeah.
Yeah. So I noticed that was on there. It has Richard Dragon 1 through 18, and then Brave and the Bold 132, and DC Comics Presents number 39 in it. So yeah, I was just going to talk about issue number one, which is called Coming of a Dragon. These were originally published in the mid-70s, and it says story by Jim Dennis based on his novel Dragon's Fists, and then art by Leopoldo Durinona.
I don't know them.
Yeah, and then it's edited by Denny O'Neil, which, well, what's interesting is that Jim Dennis is actually a pseudonym for Denny O'Neil.
Oh, is that right? I didn't realize. I kind of guessed that maybe that was going to be the case. But even
Yeah.
in comic base, it says Richard Dragon was originally adapted from Jim Dennis's novel Dragon's Fist, and it doesn't indicate on even on this that that's the same person.
Yeah. I didn't know that until I looked at Wikipedia, and the Richard Dragon page. But yeah, I guess he originally, I think he might have written it with another person, but they wrote a novel, a martial arts novel, and then later he decided to adapt it to a comic. And they might have been. There might have been sometimes authors use pseudonyms just to separate their work, but sometimes there's also like contractual reasons they do it as well. So anyway, it starts in Kyoto with Richard. He's Richard Dragon. He's breaking into, well, he's outside, but he's sneaking around outside a home, and he's trying to steal a jade Buddha statue that's 1100 years old.
Chris, just to interrupt real quick, I did want to let you know that if you'd like to purchase Dragon's Fists by Jim Dennis on Amazon, they have one on sale for $87.38 for the paperback.
Wow.
There you go.
From 1974.
Yeah, I guess it's probably out of print.
Yeah, it's long out of print.
Probably hasn't been reprinted, yeah.
Yeah, that's just
Maybe this
interesting.
new collection will kick up Richard Dragon fever.
That's right. It's a
All we
cool
need
cover. Definitely
is a
collect
Richard
these comics.
Dragon movie announcement, and then
Yeah.
that book will be worth a lot more,
Oh my God.
and then this
Yeah,
collection will be in demand.
probably be
I
republished.
love when DC does this stuff though, 'cause it's so obscure, and I mean, he has a lot of ties, like especially to the Question and stuff like that. And I did not know. I always thought it was Denny O'Neil. I did not know that he went by another name. So I learned something.
Yeah, and I think with the second issue it says
Denny O'Neil, yeah.
well, it says adapted by Denny O'Neil from Jim Dennis's novel,
Dude, he did not want to let on at all.
as opposed to just saying, saying that Jim Dennis is doing the adapting,
Yeah.
whatever difference that makes, but yeah, so anyway, an older Japanese man comes up to him and says, I welcome you to my villa. And he knows who Richard is. And he just explains that by saying I am occasionally able to pluck the cord of knowledge. He says if it was if the statue was mine, I would give it to you. However, it's not mine to give, so I must ask that you leave it. So Richard actually tries to punch the old man. The old man is a martial artist, so it doesn't go too well for Richard. Richard pulls a knife and is about to, and he tries to cut the old man with that. Again, doesn't go well for him. He's disarmed and thrown. Another younger man named Benjamin, who we later learn is from Harlem, he shows up and is Richard's attitude continues, and he threatens Benjamin, and again, Richard doesn't go well for Richard. He gets thrown into a nearby pond, and he finally cools off and asks what kind of place he's at, and they explain that it's a school, and the older man is a teacher in the martial arts, and they offer to train him. And Richard says, "Wait a minute, I'm here to steal something, and you're going to invite me to stay as a student." And the teacher goes just by Osensei, which just means teacher. He says that he senses that underneath all of Richard's hate, he senses a core of goodness that they could cultivate. And so then it goes into training montage for the next 6 years. He trains not just in the martial arts but in other disciplines and knowledge and Western and Eastern philosophies and stuff. And then after that time has passed, that he the teacher calls him before him and says that it's time for him and Benjamin to go out and into the world again. Even though they're like sons to him, he'll miss them. It's time that they make their own way in the world. And as they're having this conversation, Benjamin comes up and tells them that he spotted like four guys sitting in a Jeep for the past hour outside. And so Benjamin and Richard go over to ask them, tell them they're on private property. And so the guys in the Jeep start something, and three of them come out. Richard and Benjamin they easily take care of them. And the guy that didn't get out of the car turns out to be a man named Barney Ling, who the teacher who has come up now knows. And apparently they both used to belong to this. Well, Barney still belongs to this organization, and the teacher used to. It's some kind of international peacekeeping group. They hire out their services. Apparently, they're called GOOD, but he says that it's not important what the initials stand for. Benjamin, in particular, is not interested in joining in to any organization. But then Barney tells them that what he wants So that whole thing was a test, of course, with the three men that attacked them, and he wants to recruit Richard and Benjamin to go after this guy in Sudan, who's the kingpin of an international slave trade. So the cause interests them, and so the rest of the issue is their mission. They go through Yemen and end up on a in a port town on the Sudanese coast, and they actually don't have much trouble finding the guy. And they come up with a plan where Benjamin is going to pretend to offer Richard to the slavers, and they take him, but they take Benjamin as well. They seize them both and lock them up. But Richard hides a pick beneath the manacle that they put him on, so they're able to escape. And so it goes through their efforts to free the rest of the slaves, and fight the guards, and there's a lot of that sort of action with them, fighting their way through up through the organization to the place where the kingpin is, the kingpin of the slave trade, that is, not the kingpin of Hell's Kitchen. He's got a room full of bodyguards, basically, that they have to fight their way through. And at once they've taken all of them out, the kingpin surprises them by pulling a revolver out of his desk, and he actually fires at Ben. And it's not clear. He got him at least a little bit. It's not clear how much, but you get just a panel of Richard's face, stone face. It says every trace of humility, no, every trace of humanity drains from Dragon's face as he gazes at Aki with empty eyes. And he jumps up into the air and seems to levitate. And even though the kingpin fires, he misses, and Dragon kicks him in the chest and sends his chair, him and his chair, out the window behind him into the crowd of former slaves that are waiting on the ground below. And from the window, Benjamin, who just fortunately just got nicked in the shoulder, they're looking down from the window, and he says, "They aren't leaving much for the Undertaker, are they?" So there's just a couple panels from there. They just talk about what happened. They said, "We've definitely been changed by what we went through here, and I'm not really sure where we're gonna go from here, but I know we can't go back to where we were, essentially." So. Yeah, and that's the end of issue one. Looking ahead, like I said, at issue two says it adapted from Jim Dennis's novel Dragon's Fist by Denny O'Neill, writer. And the artist, Jim Starlin and Alan Weiss, are the artists, with Al Milgrom inks on the next issue, so it has a bit of a different look. I'm not sure if they stayed on as artists from here. No, because issue three is by Jack Kirby, surprisingly.
Yeah, all over the place for artists.
Yeah, that definitely has a different look, which it looks pretty cool. I'll have to check that one out. Yeah, and then issue four, they've got Rick Estrada and Wally Wood.
Wow.
Some big names, but
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty neat.
But at the same time, back in those days, they tried to do house style, so they tried to have similar look and feels. Like Kirby's gonna be different, but I'm sure they had sure they had a template.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely can tell a difference, but it's the Kirby issue that really stands out. I'm continuing to flip through
You got the first appearance of Bronze Tiger and Lady Shiva in this series too.
Oh, cool. Rick Estrada and Wally Wood definitely stay on it for a while. I don't know if they stay on until the end, but how far am I? On issue 9, there's Rick Estrada is still on it. So they got some regularity at least for a while there. So.
I bought that collection. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Maybe after this Legion quest that you're on.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to go next?
Sure. All right. Okay, so my first one I got today is Black Knight number one.
Are you reading the original Black Knight? The Golden Age Black Knight?
From 1955.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the
That's pretty cool
facsimile
because I
issue
didn't know
today.
that. Man, in the 70s, I picked up something called an Avengers Index.
Oh, yeah,
And
I remember that.
yeah, and it was an index of all the Avengers comics. And the weird thing about that index is it started with Black Knight. Like
Oh,
that cover of Black Knight. Yeah, I remember
yeah.
it distinctively. I was like, "What? This is the Avengers. What the hell is this Black Knight doing in it?" I couldn't figure out. Because
This was a fun one to read.
the indexes were supposed to be like an asset to help you buy like all of the issues. And then give you like a little synopsis of why and who did it.
Yeah, I thought those were interesting. I don't remember who published them. They weren't Marvel and they weren't DC. With some other company.
Yeah. I only had one. Did you have more than one?
I had indexes to, I think, the Teen Titans and
X-Men?
Justice League.
Oh,
I
okay.
might maybe I had X-Men, but I don't remember. I remember specifically Justice League and Teen Titans.
I didn't know they did them for DC.
Yeah. Hang on, I'm gonna see if I can find it at all. Teen. Official Teen Titans Index. This was later, 1985,
Oh,
by
okay.
ICG, whoever that is. But yeah, it was a 5-issue series that covered from their first appearance in Brave and Bold up through Tales of the Teen Titans 62 and the New Teen Titans 1 through 16. So that's probably as far as it was at that point. It was interesting, though. But yeah, so back to Black Knight. This is a facsimile. I always enjoy reading these. And on the back cover is an ad, an amazing new way to a slimmer figure. Reduce with delicious Kelpadine candy plan. That's right. This can happen to you. And it shows a lady going from more heavy to medium size to thin. And it says, this can happen to you with this delicious reducing candy plan. Yep. This candy must taste as good or better than your favorite candy or your money back. Isn't that something?
That must have been one good candy.
I guess so. Kelpadine, and so I guess that has to do with seaweed. Candy made out of seaweed.
That doesn't sound like very good.
It does not sound good at all.
I went on a seaweed kick, like dehydrated that seaweed stuff you could buy at a store for a while, but
Uh-huh.
it didn't last long.
How does it, what does it taste like?
You could get them different flavors seasoned. Like, it tastes like
Uh-huh.
seaweed, but it's flavored. Like, you could get flavored teriyaki or flavored all kinds of different flavors.
Gotcha.
But that index I was talking about is in our database. It's called Marvel Comics Index, and it's number 3. That's the one that talks about that Black Knight book. It even says it in the comment
Yeah,
here.
it does. It's right
Yeah, it
there.
says Black Knight 1 through 5.
Yeah, so this predated those issues that I was talking that I was telling you about with Teen Titans. Okay, so Black Knight, we have the origin of the Black Knight in the first story, and it introduces the this this happens in Arthurian times in Britain, and it introduces some of the characters. Aside from King Arthur, of course, you have Galahad and Lancelot and Merlin, and then it briefly introduces Mordred, who is the nephew of the king, and they tell you right off the bat that he's a sinister, treacherous lord, and his wife is Morgan le Fay, which also has been traditionally portrayed as evil as well. To start out this one, everyone's assembled in Camelot, and there's a person on a horse at the portcullis, and they don't know who it is, but it turns out that it's Mordred's cousin Percy. And so they open it for him. It's Percy of Scandia, and he looks he's for the time he's not, a manly man. He's not an he doesn't portray himself as the traditional knight. He has blonde hair that's done up in like a bob, and he's wearing very fancy clothes and the tights, and he constantly has a kerchief in his hand. So he gets a lot of trash talking from the rest of the knights and everyone else about how he's really not much of a man at all, and that starts off almost right away. But Merlin says, "Let me show you to your quarters." So he shows him down to an area that's kind of away from all the others, and they close the door behind them and they start talking. And it turns out that Merlin has asked Sir Percy to come because there are different people that are out to get Arthur, and they're going to employ Sir Percy as kind of a secret weapon. He is going to portray himself as a coward and in a bit of a harmless fool, and because of and for that reason, no one will suspect that he's really the Black Knight. So Merlin goes ahead and gives him his armor and helmet, and now and he says, only I will know that you are the Black Knight and you'll be able to protect King Arthur." So that actually almost that happens almost right away, when one of the doors of the castle gets bashed in, and it turns out that they're going to attack the Black Knight and Merlin before anything can get started. And these are some of Mordred's men, but the Black Knight quickly takes care of them. And this is the there's no proof that any of these people work for Mordred, so they're not able to implicate him. But then the day or two later, the king and company are going out into the woods to hunt, and of course King Percy says, "Oh no, I'm not going to hunt. I'm going to stay and play my mandolin." And so he stays behind, and word gets out that some of Mordred's men are going to kind of trap Arthur and dispatch him. So in the woods, they tell King Arthur that they heard a sound in the bushes, you know, that must be one of their something that they're hunting. Oh, a boar. And so they encourage him to go off by himself, and he goes right into a trap. And so he starts fighting. Percy dons his Black Knight outfit, and as quickly as possible leaves Camelot, goes into the woods. Arthur's just about having to yield because he's just exhausted. He's been surrounded by men, but just in the nick of time, the Black Knight comes and is able to save the day. And Mordred appears and sees just the two of them, and he immediately pretends that he thinks that the Black Knight is trying to attack Arthur. So he starts fighting him, but Arthur quickly puts an end to it, saying that no, he actually saved his life. And again, nobody knows that this is actually Mordred's men, so he can't be implicated. But Arthur goes ahead and dubs him an official Knight of the Round Table, even though nobody knows his identity, because he says he had a vow to never take off his helmet. He must be a Mandalorian. So yeah, that's the end of the first story. There's a story in between about somebody named the Crusader, and it is during the Crusades. And some of the English have been kind of their boat has hit some rocks and battered, and they have to get to dry land. And it turns out they're in the middle of it's Eastern Europe, I know, and there's some Huns there, and also some Mongols. So the Mongols and the Muslims actually are in league with each other, but the one leader of the Muslim group, he says these soldiers are exhausted. We're not going to attack them when, you know, they're just basically looking for shelter. The Mongols don't go along with that and try to start attacking. So this main, his name's El Alamein, and he basically is defending the British. And so he has a one-on-one combat with the leader of the Mongols, and he ends up beating him. It turns out that the one Englishman that was in charge, they top everything off. It sounds like they had the plague too, and he starts dying, and he recognizes El Alamein's necklace as his mother's. And so it turns out El Alamein is half English and half Muslim, and find out that that's his long lost brother, and that he wants him to to become the Crusader, and that's what happens in this particular issue. And they promise another appearance of the Crusader in issue number two. We end up this comic with a second Black Knight story, quite similar to the first, in that this time Arthur has disappeared, and nobody knows where he's gone. So Mordred decides that since he's related to the king, he's going to take the throne until they can find King Arthur. Le Fay actually takes the queen's throne too, in spite of the fact that Guinevere is literally right there. They take her away because they said that, you know, she must be just overwrought because of the fact that Arthur's gone, and they kind of sequester her to her quarters. And so Mordred organizes the knights and says, "Okay, everyone, go out and search for your king." Of course, Sir Percy, they say you're not fit to look for anyone out in the wilderness, so you're going to just stay here. He goes and visits Merlin, and with Merlin's crystal ball, they see that actually Arthur has been captured and is in one of his own dungeons there in Camelot. And at this point, this is where Merlin bequeaths the Ebon Blade, the Black Blade, to the Black Knight, and he gets his famous sword in this second story. So apparently they say that there's a lot of different dungeons in Camelot, and it's a matter of which one is he in. So he starts searching, which gets the attention of more of Mordred's men. He has to fight them off. He has to escape. He has to try to figure out where Arthur is. He finally does discover it. He hands Arthur a torch from the dungeon, and he and the Black Knight manage to fight off these goons, which, again, they make it a point to say that there's no way that they can tell for sure that these are Mordred's men, and they make it a point to say that Arthur, for some reason, just is convinced that Mordred does not have a trace of evil in him, and until they have actual proof, there's nothing that they're going to be able to say, because Arthur's not going to believe it. So that was the end of this issue. It was, as I said, it's very fun to kind of read some of these older ones. I like the facsimile ones where you see all the ads and stuff like that. It makes it a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, and that's a book you'll never be able to afford.
Is that an expensive one?
Yeah, I didn't think even so. Bother. Yeah.
That's okay. I read it now.
Yeah,
including the candy diet.
That's what's good. I wish they would
want the candy diet.
Well, you can take them up on. It sounds like there'd be a lot of candies, though. I wonder if anybody took them up on that offer.
I don't know.
No, but if you could find something better, you get your money back. It just seems like you would.
That's right. It must taste as good or better than your favorite candy.
It sounds terrible.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what who knows? I'm sure they load it up with sugar anyhow. And they just tell you that's all you should eat.
Well,
three of those a day.
I am continuing with one of my favorite mutants, Cable. I bet you thought I was going to say Deadpool. But Cable and Deadpool have become some of my favorite characters as of late. And I can't get enough of them. But,
I don't even know who you are anymore, Mike.
They're amazing. They are so good. Cable 45, 46, and 47. These are done by James Robinson of Starman fame. And,
you know what? I'm sorry. I should have told you, but those Black Knight stories were written by Stan Lee.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. They don't have credits on there, so I couldn't tell who the artist was, but I saw Stan Lee's name on there.
Yeah. So these ones, I'm almost done completing my Cable run. I think I need only two more issues to finish it. And these are done by James Robinson and Randy Green. I think Randy Green, I remember from the Image days, or a title called Dark Child or something like that. But he was an artist on there. The app has a gap between the previous run, the Jeff Loeb run, and this. It starts with 45. You miss like six or seven issues, which is very interesting. I don't know why they would have a gap, but you miss the Todd DeZago issues with Scott Clark, and you miss the Brian K. Vaughan issue with Chap Yap, and a James Robinson issue, which is even more interesting because you'd think that this one, the issue 44 by James Robinson and Randy Green, leads into this issue. So I don't know why that one would be missing off the app. But these have been some late night reads, and I think lately I've been pretty damn consistent with my mood, 'cause I've either been reading a lot of Spawn or Savage Dragon or Cable and Deadpool. I've been really, really focused lately on reading this material. And this series takes place in it's a crossover event. So I didn't read all the other books surrounding it, but maybe Rob, you can help me because you're a big X-Men fan if you put your memory ha hat on. But there's a
I am,
title.
but I'm not. I haven't bought any. I have very little cable.
Yeah, but this is an event.
Okay.
So this tied into an event called Zero Tolerance, which happened right after Onslaught Reborn. And
Do remember the name of that
it
event?
seems to have involved Bastion. And at this point, like, I don't know why there wasn't anybody at the Avengers Mansion, but Bastion seems like a mutant hater that convinced the government to go attack the mansion. And it looks like the mansion's empty. But Cable has to go back and protect it. And I don't know if this is like this must be a, like a retcon of I never realized this. Maybe you guys do, but I didn't realize that Cable helped design the Danger Room and the mansion. Like he helped design that with Xavier. So he like went into the past and helped design this thing.
I
So
don't remember that at all.
he like knew he like knew the schematics. He knew what Cerebro, he helped with everything 'cause he was from the future and he helped build this thing and which was an interesting thing 'cause I never knew that factoid. That
Yeah,
it was
no, I don't.
obviously it was obviously a retcon thing 'cause Cable didn't come into the 90s, but
Right.
Marvel's pretty good at overall keeping things in continuity and linear as opposed to DC, which changes a lot. They change a lot, but in my mind, it's all in continuity. So
Yeah, I don't
this,
remember a lot about Zero Tolerance. I just remembered it was one of those events, which, I mean, honestly, they've had a few of them where, like, the government employs a group to, shut down mutants, capture mutants, etc. That type of thing. I think it was one of those
yeah. And in
type
this
events.
case, Bastion got control of the mansion, and Cable had to try to go back in to destroy the evidence. And I don't destroy all any computer programs because supposedly Xavier not only had records of all the mutants and their powers and weaknesses, but he kind of like that Justice League story where Batman was collecting all of that and it fell into the wrong hands. Well, Bastion was going to go collect all this stuff and use it to destroy the mutants. Plus, it had all the family members, so like the family members could be targeted. But I'm not an expert on like Cable and Nate Gray, but Nate Gray is the X-Men, and it's kind of like the same character, just a younger version of himself. And I don't know how they could exist, but I know they were. He was using his powers to contact Nate Gray, and it's extremely painful because I think it's the same person. So, I don't know. It causes like this brain overload. But he's like, Nate, I need you to go and find and protect these people because I believe that Bastion has found this information. And Bastion's soldiers look sort of like Deadpoolian. They look like a Deadpool face with body armor, and they actually have like pretty good personalities of like they're like sort of stormtroopers, but they have a lot of personality behind them. So they'll be in the hallway and they'll be talking about how they're gonna get Cable, and it's kind of like the it's kind of like an episode of Die Hard where Cable is sort of McClane in the building causing hell in the mansion, and Bastion and his soldiers are wrecking havoc, except there's nobody in there. But Cable rescues Caliban, who I guess was the only person in the mansion, which is very odd. Like, I'm very interested to read this storyline to find out, like, where were the X-Men? What the hell was going on? Onslaught, I'm well aware of, the Fantastic Four Avengers and all those characters going away to another universe and Franklin Richards being behind it and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know what was happening at the time of the X-Men, so it's kind of like a weird thing to be jumping into this series, but it's very intriguing. And it was very, this Bastion character seems, I don't know, he seems like he's not human either. So I don't know if like he's computerized or what.
I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but I remember a little bit about him.
Oh, tell me. I don't care.
I believe that he is indeed like an android or something like that, almost like a Sentinel Prime type person.
Okay, so he's like a sentinel.
Yeah.
He
If I'm remembering.
seems like that. He seems like very unemotional, at
Yeah.
all. Like, and very systematic. Like, he's not human. Cable even makes a reference when they're fighting. He goes, "You might not be a mutant, but I don't think you're human either." Like he makes that reference. But
Yeah, I believe that he's like some sort of like sentient robot or an android or something like that.
so I'd have to like jump over to X-Men titles to find out like why was the mansion vacated? Why was it left unprotected? Why was Caliban sick? Like, why was he bedridden and the only person in the mansion? But anyway, Cable grabs Caliban in his injured state and takes him, 'cause underneath the mansion is the Morlock tunnels. So he's able to get Caliban to the Morlock, and Caliban's like, "I want to help you, Cable." And he goes, "You can't help me. You can't even move." So he said, "You can help me by escaping, by getting out of here. These guys will kill you." So Caliban does leave. Cable goes back because he needs to destroy. He loads all of the data. At least he thinks that it hasn't been infiltrated yet or retrieved yet. But Bastion has a lot of the data, because you later on find out in the confrontation, he's like, "I know who your parents are. I know who this is." Like, he's got a lot of the information. And Cable somehow knows that, because that's how he contacts Nate Gray and said, "I need you to protect these people, because I think Bastion's infiltrated the information." But Cable loads all that information in. They come into a final confrontation where both of them are injured. Cable's injured because he uses all of his powers. So there's like 100 soldiers in the mansion. But he goes into their minds and mind wipes them. So they don't know what the fuck is going on. They're like wondering, like, "Why am I here? What's going on?" So he like drops to his knees and is bleeding. His nose is bleeding and everything because he used all his powers. And Bastion's sort of injured, and then he's at a bar with GW Bridge. I don't know if you guys remember him, but he had his own action figure back in the day. But
I do
GW
remember.
Bridge works for SHIELD. He was created like with all of those Cable characters.
Well, you know what's funny is that if you would have asked me just in general, GW Bridge, I would have told you he's an Image character, not a Marvel character.
Yeah, GW Bridge was sort of the time around Bishop and Cable,
Yeah.
except GW Bridge was working for SHIELD. He was sort of in the mutant group.
Gotcha.
And he plays a big part in the Cable comic book. He's sort of always hunting Cable, but in this case, he's like Cable's inside man. Like, he was helping Cable retrieve all of these guys that he mind wiped that were wandering around the mansion. So SHIELD came in with their helicarrier and arrested all these dudes who didn't even know who they were. And Bastion was gone, and he's like, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "Well, We were both injured. We both passed out, and I don't remember what happened, but I think Bastion has a lot of the information. So that's sort of how it ended. But I don't know, like, where was Cyclops? Where was Iceman? Where were all these guys, where were all these characters? I don't know.
Yeah, and
And I
I don't
kind of, I
remember
kind
if
of,
they captured the mansion and kind of they had a retreat or if something else had happened. I don't remember that.
Yeah, this I did Google it, and there is a collection called X-Men Operation Zero Tolerance that came out in 2012, and it collected Generation X 26 through 31, X-Force 67 through 70, X-Men 65 through 70, Uncanny X-Men 346, Wolverine 115 through 118, and Cable 45 through 47, which I just covered. And then I kind of indirectly covered X-Men 30 because that's when he contacted Nate Gray.
Right.
So I don't know. I assume the X-Force stories are going to tell me why Caliban's injured, and in the mansion, and the X-Men titles would tell me why the where the X-Men are and why they're not in the mansion.
Yeah, I
So
would assume that.
yeah, but it was good, and the art was awesome. I am so into this Cable world.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I don't think I would have been into this rabbit hole if it wasn't for observations, I'll tell you that. It led me into a lot of things I never read or was interested in, and his passion and stuff just it hooks me, and it makes me want to go read all this stuff I never read. And yeah, I'm loving it.
That's cool. And it's, I mean, you say this all the time, but you're right, and it is great that you have this type of view on things. But seems as most people get older, the more they gravitate towards just like what they liked when they were younger, and everything else is bad. And you seem to be the opposite, where like you're liking more and more things that you didn't like before.
Yeah, and I like it. I
Yeah.
like it that I'm not like a grumpy old man that's like, get off of my lawn. This ain't my X-Men.
Yeah.
I'm able to take every X-Men and like enjoy it for what it is. I never thought I'd be into manga, and I'm reading manga. Like I don't know what the hell's happening, but
It's good though. Keeps
it's a
you
good
young, I
thing.
think.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
Keeps
know,
me
keeps.
experiencing things I haven't experienced before.
Yep,
But
absolutely.
it's so weird because I would have never thought Cable and Deadpool would be in my top 10 X-Men, but they are. They're like number one and two. I really want to read Savage Avengers now, because Deadpool's in it and Conan. Like I've read the first few issues, but I want to dig into that because it just seems like such a weird combination.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you're up.
Okay. The other thing I was going to talk about was I read the first issue of DC's Star Trek: The Next Generation comic book. IDW republished it. So they have like a paperback series called Star Trek Classics where they reprint stuff from the DC and Wildstorm
I had
Star
no
Trek
I
comics.
had no idea that they did that. Like I know that when somebody acquires a property, they can reprint stuff, but
Yeah.
I had no idea they touched the DC stuff, much less the Wildstorm stuff.
Yeah, they've put out about six, five or six volumes, and it actually is more. It looks like it's mostly Wildstorm stuff that they've, because it's not in order. Like the first one they did, the Gorn Crisis, was just a like 96-page graphic novel that Wildstorm did, and then the next volume, Enemy Unseen, is like 224 pages, and it has like two miniseries, two 4-issue miniseries, and in a one shot. I think we're all originally Wildstorm. So there's five volumes. I don't know if they're doing any more because it's been a few years since they published any of these, but the one I read was from a volume called was volume is volume four, and it's called Beginnings, and it's the early issues of the DC line.
Do you know if it's the mini series that came out prior to the regulars, like the year before the regular series?
Yeah, I gotta figure that out
Who's,
because
do you know who the writer is?
One second. The writer is Michael Carlin,
Okay.
and the penciler is Pablo Marcos,
That
and the
looks like
story's.
it is the mini series, and that came out like the year prior to the regular series. So this is
Okay.
right at the beginning.
Yeah, so yeah, thanks for. Yeah, the story is called Where No One Has Gone Before.
That's it. Yeah, that's the first issue.
Okay. And they actually, what's kind of like, I was just reading along and then I realized like I'm beyond what a normal comic issue would, the length of a normal comic issue. Like this is just going on and on, 'cause they don't have the covers. They might be at the back of the issue.
That's kind of a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, I hate that. So I'm actually now.
I like when they put them in between.
Yeah,
That is
exactly.
my 100%. Like when they collect an edition, I want to know how it was coming out in monthlies.
I'm the same way.
I don't like when they even, if they exclude it, then I'm really pissed. But I don't
Yeah.
even like when they put them at the end. Like I don't want them at the end. I want it like I want the little dividers, the way it was originally intended. But
Yeah.
I'm sure that a lot of like trade readers that just don't care would rather it be the other way.
Yeah, maybe. I don't mind reading digitally. I don't mind reading trades, but like I at least want a semblance of the individual issue experience, you know, at least give me an idea where the, because they were written as individual issues, you know, so I want, you know, that was when they wrote it, when they drew it, they were considering it as a single issue. So that influences the way that they created it, you know. So it's,
And especially then. Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely.
But it looks like this first issue was pretty long, though. It was 38 pages, so maybe I'm talking out of my ass. I don't. I better double check. But well, I know there's no, you know, there's no first issue cover,
Well,
so I know that much for sure. So let me
Chris,
see where page.
it doesn't have like page count, you know, in our in the database, but the cost of the first issue was $1.50, and every other issue was $1. So it definitely seems like it would have been a larger pay count.
Yeah, it's 38 pages, and there's definitely no cover after issue one for issue two, because I found it that because one nice thing at least is that they put the page numbers in the original issue in the bottom right panel, so I can see it goes 37 and then end, and then a couple pages later I can see a number two.
Gotcha.
So this is probably just that mini series because it's 152 pages. And yeah, they don't have the covers in here at all. That sucks. They probably just, I guess they didn't want to acknowledge, they want to pretend it's not a DC comic. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and one other thing, spoiler alert, this issue is not that great. It's okay, but it's so-so. I think I like Michael Carlin, I like Pablo Marcos. I think they probably were not able to use the likenesses of the staff. So some of them look more like themselves than others. Picard being one that does not look like himself. Deanna Troi, number one, they kind of look like themselves. Worf looks pretty much like himself. Everybody else is kind of looks kind of off, but anyway, it's early days for the crew. Tasha Yar is there as head of security, and Worf is just like a navigator or something like that, showing my lack of Star Trek terminology. But Dr. Crusher comes out, and she's got Wesley with him, with her, and Picard says, "Dr. Crusher, you're abusing your bridge clearance. This is not the time or place for this discussion. And I've told you before about bringing your son up here." She's there because she's been waiting for weeks for certain medical supplies, and but then they're interrupted because Worf has established contact with the people of this planet called TB13, which is what like their current mission is at this point. So they communicate with beings on the planet, and then they are going to put together the away team. And this is like early Next Generation days, so not only is Picard a little harsher in his attitude, but he's also the whole thing with him not going on away missions and staying with the ship, and Riker being the one that always goes on the away, away missions is still firmly in place. They're basing it kind of, I think maybe, I'm not sure exactly when this came out, but it was within the first couple seasons of the show. So they're getting their away team together, and all of a sudden the Enterprise shakes, and most people on the bridge fall over. And they realize they're being fired on by the planet, and they weren't expecting that. And so they ask the people that they're in contact with, and they claim to be innocent of firing on the vessel, on the Enterprise. So they get fired on again, and the race people that they're speaking with continue to claim innocence, and that they're peace loving. So on the bridge, they're speculating, well, maybe someone from like a different country is doing that, but the computer states there's only one race of people on the planet and only one city state in the entire world. So an away team is put together to go down, and this is where things get kind of weird. So most of the bridge crew goes on the away team. So they call two people to the to come and take the place of Data and LaForge at the like front I think like the navigator and whoever else, like the, those two front seats. And it's like this married couple, and their uniforms are like a combination of the Next Generation uniform and a superhero outfit. Like they don't have, so it's the same upper body, but it, it goes into like, you know, there's no legs on it. And they have like these green capes, and they're arguing with each other. Like, I'm not getting busted because you're too busy blow drying your hair. If you didn't take so long in there in the first place, I'd been ready all, a long time ago. Ah, tell it to the review board. So this is Michael and Patricia Bickley. And so they're called in as like replacements. And they like sit down at their seats and they're still arguing with each other. And Picard says, the Bickleys are at it again, I see. Worf says, looks that way, sir. So they take their orders from Picard, but they're still, he's like, Mr. Bickley says, no problem, Captain, sir. Keeping her shields up is one of my wife's specialties. She says, look who's talking about defense systems. And Picard's like, oh, man, that'll be enough out of you two. So I don't know what the hell's going on.
It's cracking me up.
It's, I mean, I guess that's the intention, is like some, is some, is some comic relief, but that they introduced some of their, some Carlin original characters here, I guess, to the comic. So they definitely, I would have remembered if they had, I've seen every episode of the show and fairly recently.
Speculators should note this is a first appearance possibly.
Yeah. You
better go spend $30 on this issue.
Yeah, maybe they'll show up in Picard. and then this will skyrocket. So the away team is briefed. They go down to the planet, and they're immediately fired upon. But then Deanna can't sense anything. Geordi scans the area with his visor and doesn't see anything. But then finally, Deanna senses some beings to their left, and Geordi's able to hone in on them. But then he picks up the appearance of some huge creature behind the like man-sized beings, and Data asks for a more detailed description, and Geordi's only just able to tell him it's like about 50 meters tall, maybe about 30 or 40 tons, and it's covered with spiked gun turrets. And Data says it sounds like a Tripolian Hellblazer. The war weapon employed on Tripoli 9 in the sector they just came from. So anyway, they get fired on again, and they run. We go back to the bridge. Picard's asking for an update on the away team. Worf says he's logged a distressing message. The aliens that they're supposed to be meeting say that they're still waiting for the away team, and they haven't shown up. And Picard says it's impossible. The coordinates are all correct. And so he tells the Bickleys to scan the planet and find their away crew. So Mrs. Bickley says, this is weird. Something's blocking my instruments, Captain. And Mr. Bickley says, just like you to give up so easily.
Very professional.
So, yeah, Picard's had enough. He says, I'll thank you, too, to spare us all your domestic problems for a change. Just do something about finding my team, or you'll find yourselves confined to your quarters together.
Nice.
So that's the threat that they'll be stuck with each other. So back on the planet, Data and Geordi end up confronted by that machine, that Hellblazer machine. Seems like the away team has gotten separated into pairs, and so they're dealing with this Data and Geordi running away from this machine, and they end up cornered, and if so the and then the machine stops, and a guy looks kind of like almost like a character out of like Warlord comes out. He's got like a on the one hand he's got what looks like a bow, but then he's also in his other hand got what looks like a futuristic rifle. So he hops down and he tells him, "Drop, I've won the game. Drop your weapons." And so they drop their phasers, and Data says, "We're armed now with our peaceful intentions alone." And he says, "Peace, we know nothing of peace on this planet." And Tasha Yar shows up from behind and like kicks him in the back of the head and knocks him out. So some more like fighting goes on. They capture some more beings, and then finally Deanna and Riker reunite with the rest of them and says well, when they show up, Tasha's about, you know, she seems like she's gonna, like she's threatening him and stuff like that. And Riker says, "Control yourself." And she says, "I was only trying to put a little scare into him, you know, playing like the Federation was ruthless." And Dan says, "That's an interesting choice of words because it seems like that's what these people have been doing all along." And they're like, "What do you mean?" So with Deanna's empathic abilities, she is able to kind of reach out to the people that they've captured, and get an accurate sense of their intentions. And all of a sudden, all these men, these warriors, they're saying, "Please don't tell on us. We'll be punished. It's just a game." They all get teleported, the away team and these men up into a ship, and these young looking people come out, and they say, "Well, we would do anything to make it up to you. We've not had a war here in centuries, despite the fact that the young ones still like to play at it." So anyway, what it turns out is that they like age backwards. They don't explain how that works. But like the warriors that they've encountered are the children. And the beings that look like kids are the adults. And so that's why they were being fired upon stuff was the kids who look like adults were playing their war game and messing around and causing trouble. So, like I said, it doesn't really explain how that works. And, you know, it was competently put together, but the weird I mean, even though the Bickley stuff was kind of amusing, it's also like as in terms of actually being like a I don't know, it was just pretty silly and seemed just kind of out of place and strange. I don't understand why they're dressed as superheroes, and like, it's just just out of, like, I don't know if they just felt like, this is a DC comic. We do superheroes. We have to put superheroes in here.
Get some capes on these guys.
You got to have somebody with a capes on. I was going to say punchline, but the reasons that it all turned out to be was, I don't know, not really that satisfying.
Yeah.
But
so that was just, you only read the first issue, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know where it goes from. I mean, I think the whole series, the series as a whole, I think, has had some, you know, there's at times was decent.
Well, maybe I think once the ongoing one started, it's more like the series.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, the show itself didn't start out that great, so it started out kind of rough.
It made me lose interest within 2 episodes. I couldn't take it.
You didn't like Q?
Well, I don't like Q at all. I don't like characters that seem like that. The only character I liked is the God character in Star Trek V. I love that character.
Very interesting.
I like the original crew. I just can't get into the next gen.
Yeah, I like them both. It took me a little while to warm up to the new crew, but I mean, I also had some nostalgia from, like, I wasn't real into it, but I would occasionally watch episodes after school. But watching the whole series in more recent years, I definitely, like, warmed up to them and like it a lot.
Cool. Does that volume have the next series too, or is it just the mini?
It's only about 150 pages, so I think it's just the mini.
Just the mini.
Yeah, and it's been a few years since
they
published
it. Believe it or not, I have almost a full run of this stuff, and I've never read it because I bought it for Barb.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I would have never guessed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Barb is the Star Trek Next Generation. she's the Star Trek Next Generation fan.
Chris, I don't think Mike heard your comment, but I didn't.
What was your comment? I missed it.
I think I just said I'm always shocked when you tell me you have comics.
I have comics.
Something like that.
A lot of comics.
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of Star Trek comics.
Well, we know that Barb is the sensible one.
Yeah, she made me buy these ones for her.
So it makes sense that she likes Next Generation.
How many of those has she read?
She started reading them. She might have read this mini and then read, I don't know, like 10 issues of the first series. And then she, to be honest with you, comics just they don't float her boat. The only one that she ever, ever got into that I remember is, well, 2 of them, Why the Last Man and DMZ. Those are the two. She started Ex Machina too, but DMZ is the one that stands out as being the one that she absolutely adored.
For Stacy, her the ones that she got into, there were 3, all Vertigo, Sandman, Fables, and Why the Last Man.
Yeah, Fables Barb was into, but I think she liked like Jack of Fables a hell of a lot more, which was Lila Sturgis.
Well, you never know. I mean, Stacy's got her own pull list now, so.
Yeah, that's crazy. Is she reading it, or is
No, she's reading. She's reading them all.
Could have some comic discussion.
Well, she'll make a point not to buy anything if I'm already buying it. So anything that she buys is stuff that I haven't chosen to get. So she'll read something like, "Oh, you'll." She'll say, "Oh, you'll like this," and she'll I said, all right, well, put it on the side and I'll read it.
Maybe I ought to
Like
give
I.
her a call then and tell her to get some Batman Fortnite because.
Oh, we don't want that.
Yes, she does. Plus, you could share the skins with your kids.
They don't play Fortnite?
Well,
Yeah,
they
they're a
will.
little young.
Yeah.
Nah, by the time they'll
Be
be on
something
to
else.
something else by then.
That's
Probably.
what I'm thinking too. No, she what was I gonna talk? Oh, Scarenhood. I didn't buy Scarenhood. And I heard a review about it, made it sound interesting.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember, but yes, Stacy bought it. So that fourth issue had just come out, so I read them all back to back. It was really good.
Good.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but I have it.
Yeah. I think you'll like it.
I'm too busy in the 90s, bro. I
Yeah.
just having a 90s, the best
You're living your
decade in
best life in
comics.
the 90s.
Yeah.
Is that why you
Me.
said, bro?
Yeah, that's right. That's what I said, bro.
Well, I think, is it my turn?
Yes, it's your turn.
All right. I'm gonna go back to my Legion well here because I'm still working hard on my what do you call it? The omnibus, the volume one of the Silver Age of Legion of Superheroes. And I'm gonna cover one that just it just tickled me. Some of them are just so like crazy that they're just so much fun to read. And this one is Adventure Comics 313. And sometimes Superboy is the Superboy story is featured on the cover. Sometimes it's the Legion. This one time it's the Legion, and I'm only covering the Legion story because that's the only thing that's in this. But you have all the ladies of the Legion walking into a small spacecraft, and Saturn Girl saying, "Superboy, we've all become victims of the Crimson Virus. Can you save us?" And Superboy says, "I'm sorry, Saturn Girl, but all the girl members of the Legion are doomed. You must spend your last days on Quarantine World." And I think we all know what that's like because we've lived on Quarantine World for about a year now. So these are the all the ladies are the condemned Legionnaires, featuring Night Girl, Phantom Girl, Lightning Lass, Triplicate Girl, Shrinking Violet, and Saturn Girl.
That's pretty harsh, Superboy.
Right? That didn't seem like he was very sympathetic. But so on one particular day, Lightning Lass, who has just taken over for Lightning Lad, who had previously died, she's helping out maintaining some power in a power plant while they do some repairs to the generator. So she's providing the power while they're fixing the generator. And just as she finishes up, she starts collapsing, saying that she feels sick and everything's going dark. Similarly, in another area, Saturn Girl is doing some interpreting using her telepathy between aliens from other worlds, and she starts to fall ill. Shrinking Violet, same thing. She was going to shrink down to inspect some rocket tubes in their spaceship, and all of a sudden she starts getting dizzy and weak. So they all start turning the color pink, and they're all sick. So they call this the Crimson Virus. And we take a brief change of setting in the secret headquarters of the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Now, at this point, the Legion of Substitute Heroes, the actual Legion, does not know that the Substitute Heroes exist as a team. All of these people have been rejected, thinking that they cannot be, they wouldn't be good, suitable for the Legion, and they decided to band together and. Anytime that they're needed, if the Legion needs help or if the Legion are off world and something happens, they pitch in to try to help out, but then kind of leave before the Legion arrives, and the Legion isn't really aware that they're together as a team. However, in this little interlude, Polar Boy says, "Oh my God, do you see what's going on with the women in the Legion? We have to try to help them. And Night Girl says, yes, I'll offer to take care of the girl Legionnaires without telling them about our organization. So she, I believe their headquarters is on the moon and in underground. So she flies off to Earth to offer to take care of them. And as soon as she gets there, she starts feeling weak and then gets the Crimson virus as well. So Sun Boy says, you know, we've got to isolate all of our girl Legionnaires, and they're going to have to send them to the appropriately named quarantine world. And that's exactly what they do. They fly them off to quarantine world
So
and
they send them to Earth
to
circa
Earth.
2020.
Exactly right. Yep, to the past. And just like that, the cover, he's a little, Superboy's a little bit more sympathetic on the inside here than he was on the cover, because most of the dialogue is exactly the same, but he does have an extra part of his dialogue where he says, "Let's hope we can find a cure before you die." So, Superboy and Mon-El, unfortunately, there's planets that are in danger of colliding out there in the universe, and they have to go and take care of that, despite what's going on with the ladies. So those two fly off. Shortly after, a new woman comes and lands, and she's flying without one of their patented flying belts. So she can fly under her own power, and she says, "I'm Satan Girl, and I've come to take the place of your girl Legionnaires. With my superpowers, I can do things that all those girls can do together." And so Sun Boy says, "Nobody can replace them. We're going to cure them, and then they're going to rejoin us." And so she calls him a fool. "You're never going to find a cure, because guess what? I'm the one who unleashed the Crimson virus on them. You rejected me, and you're going to regret it. I'm going to quarantine world, and when I'm through with your girl Legionnaires, they'll be dead." So they try to grab her to stop her, and she flies up and smushes their rocket ship with her bare hands, and she's got super strength, super speed, and invulnerability, and she flies off. And then now the male Legionnaires think they're in really, really bad shape at this point, because they can't call on Superboy or Mon-El. They're pretty much doomed. And Cosmic Boy, thank God, he thinks, wait a minute, there is somebody who would be a match for her, and that is Supergirl. She actually promised to come visit us about this time. So there she is. She shows up, and she's like, "We're gonna, you know, we need your help." They say, "We're gonna make you the honorary leader of the Legion right now to help us deal with Satan Girl." And so they're wondering who she is, where she came from, et cetera. So they fly off to quarantine world, and they're being cared for by robots. They're trying to use some curative rays, but doesn't seem to be having much effect. Satan Girl shows up and starts dousing them with a crimson ray that's making them even sicker. Just at that point, Supergirl shows up, and she's trying to see who this woman is, but she's wearing a lead-lined mask, so she can't see her face. Anyhow, they start getting into a huge fight, and Supergirl quickly realizes that Satan Girl seems to be as fast, as strong, and as invulnerable as Supergirl herself is. So she's like, "There's only one chance. I'm going to try to use my heat vision to melt away her lead mask and figure out who she is. She's invulnerable, so the heat's not going to hurt her." But Satan Girl knows what she's up to and kind of breaks her hold and starts flying away. Now, at this point, Supergirl just figures this woman has to be Kryptonian. That's the only possible explanation for her strength. So she must be a Kryptonian. She goes to the hospital in quarantine world and asks if they have any samples of green kryptonite, and they do. So they give her that in a lead box, and they fly off. She flies off to find Satan Girl. Now, luckily, she makes it a point to let us know that when Satan Girl flew away, she had watched her with her telescopic vision, so she knows that she's waiting on a lonely asteroid. Supergirl gets there. Now, Satan Girl also has supervision and could also see that Supergirl was coming after her from Quarantine World, and it's easy to, for her to guess what's in that lead-lined box. She stands there still and let Supergirl throw the box at her, and green kryptonite dust powder lands all over her, and it doesn't affect her at all. So at this point, there's only one explanation. She's immune to green kryptonite, so she must be a robot. That's exactly what Supergirl thinks. She's got to be a robot. Satan Girl flies off. And at this point, Supergirl goes back to the rest of the Legion on Quarantine World and says, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know how we're going to stop her. You know, all the ladies are getting sicker and sicker. We've got to find out her origin and see what type of secret vulnerability she may have. So she's like, we know one, she's immune to green kryptonite. We know two, she's wearing a lead-lined mask. So lead doesn't bother her, which means she can't be a Daxamite. She's got to be an android instead. Let's see if we can somehow actually locate her. Now, in the meantime, the rest of the Legion grab the girls. They're all in their wheelchairs, and they push them out onto the rocket ship, and they fly to a hidden world that's hidden in a dark cosmic cloud to keep the girls away from Satan Girl. Now, there's this weird, really disturbing round ball creatures that have really disturbing faces, and they're hairy. However, Supergirl had saved them at one point from extinction, so they are more than the Legion is more than welcome to stay there and keep the girls safe. Bouncing Boy is overjoyed because he's got somebody to bounce with, which he does. And Satan Girl somehow shows up, so knows exactly where they are. And she starts beating all of the male Legionnaires. Supergirl decides to use what she has here as a weapon that shoots a gas that temporarily paralyzes any android's chemical life. So she shoots it at Satan Girl, and Satan Girl starts laughing, saying, you thought I was an android? Like, you'd be amazed if you knew who I was. Now, these bouncing creatures start bouncing all over Satan Girl, and Satan Girl can't really, every time she blows one of them away with her super breath, it bounces back. So they're distracting her so they can get all the girls back onto the spaceship, and they fly off to another secret location so she can't harm the girls again. So they get to this other area, but Satan Girl shows up again, and this time with a huge armload of green kryptonite. She throws it on Supergirl. The rest of the Legion start attacking, and they're like, wait a minute, we've got an idea. Satan Girl's powers can't affect animals because they saw those bouncing creatures attack her. So take the Legion ship back through time and get the Legion of Super Pets. So that's just what Lightning Lad does. He gets in his time bubble, and he gets Super Horse. He gets Super Monkey. Both of these are not named yet. They're Super Horse and Super Monkey.
Comet.
Streaky. Yeah, well, they have a name, but they didn't have a name when this. They didn't have names.
Really?
When this came.
That's before the Supergirl issue where Comet or Adventure Comics where she wasn't it Action Comics where Comet was named.
That's also in this one because it also had to do with the Legion, but they didn't name the horse and they didn't name Beppo the Super Monkey yet.
That's weird.
That's all they were called.
I would have thought that was before this.
I know, right?
I would have thought.
Yeah, Krypto and Streaky are the only ones that have names. But so Lightning Lad gets them all, brings them back to what's going on in the present, and the Super Pets start attacking. and they're immune to the red kryptonite radiations, which only affect humans, which is what she was actually dousing people with. And she says, "Oh, I'm doomed. I'm doomed." And he said, "She says my time is up. I'm doomed." And Supergirl says, "What do you mean? Who are you anyway?" And she takes off her mask, and it's Supergirl. It's the same person. And she's like, "You don't remember this, but we divided into two girls, and I'm the other one. When we went back into, or when we went forward into time to meet the Legion, a red kryptonite actually passed by us and split us in two. It knocked you out. I was still conscious, and so I took off. And now we know that after 48 hours, the effects are reversed. So what I wanted to do is get away from you and be able to have my own life." And I thought the best way to do that was to confuse the issue by making all of the girl Legionnaires sick. It would confuse Supergirl into thinking maybe she would get sick too and stay away. It didn't work. And now my time is up. The 48 hours are just about up, and I failed. So my last minutes are fading. My life is ending. It would have been wonderful to live on my own, but it's over. And she sinks up and fades into our hero Supergirl. And that's it. The red kryptonite has passed. And Supergirl says, "Well, how come she was immune to green kryptonite?" And Sunboy stands up and says, "Look, we found this suit of lead armor painted to look exactly like Satan Girl. She must have worn it when she handled green kryptonite. Poor Satan Girl." And they said, "Well, we the girls have recovered. We've won the day thanks to the Legion of Super Pets." That literally was one of the most insane comics I've read in a very long time. It was like all over the place. Like those 10-hour explanations are amazing. And the only other thing that I will say is that this is now like a good 4 or 5 years after the Legion, the first appearance of the Legion, and like quickly after that, some Legionnaires were shown. Like I think by the third appearance, we had some other Legionnaires such as Sunboy, Colossal Boy, I think Invisible Kid, Phantom Girl. Phantom Girl, even to this date of me reading, which I'm currently on, I haven't read 316 yet, so I'm up through 315. Phantom Girl literally has not said one thing. She's been in the background maybe three times, and you have no sense of who like half of these characters are because you may have seen them once, twice, three times, but they've never had a story. We don't know like even what their real names are or anything. They've never been featured at all. They're just like, and Colossal Boy was the same way until I think a couple issues ago, finally something happened with Colossal Boy that you actually saw him in action. But it's kind of funny that like these guys literally were in like the third appearance of the Legion, but have never been even like talked about other than what their superhero name is. But that was a lot of fun. It was very, very amusing. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Same girl
I
sounds
love Old
cool.
Legion.
It's just a lot. It's just a lot of fun. It's like you don't know what to expect anytime you read the stuff, and it's like, oh yeah, sure. You find out literally like six panels from the end of the story that like red kryptonite had flown by them when they were going forward in time. And
She's
that's what.
incredibly powerful. Holy crap.
Yeah, well, she was Supergirl.
No, but it just seems super breath, longevity, god dang.
Was good. It was a good one. I highly recommend reading any of these like late 50s, early 60s Legion stories.
Yeah, I mean, if someone tried the stuff that they do in those stories nowadays, like people would flip out. But if you know what you're getting in for, what you're in for, it's pretty entertaining.
Very much so.
They break lots of like storytelling rules and
Yeah.
stuff.
That's
I
why
had
I
a good
don't
time.
talk to people that flip out about that.
It's so
I don't want to
enjoyable.
know people that flip out. I'm gonna talk about something else Chris loves, like besides Legion. Cable. So Cable number 48 through 49.
I was gonna say, I think you mentioned Cable earlier.
I don't have a problem with Cable. I mean, I still don't really like Deadpool comics, but I like to tease you because of like how much your stance has changed on that.
Yeah, I hated Deadpool.
His views are evolving.
Yeah, for the better. I think as closer I get to death, the more open I am to more ideas.
That's certainly one way to say it.
Your obsession is just becoming all-encompassing. Like you just want any and all comics, like no, with no exceptions.
It's true. It's true. This story I have read before, but I need to reabsorb it. This is what got me into Cable in the first place, was an artist named Ledron. Ledron, God, he draws like Kirby. Like he's got the Kirby layouts, the Kirby style. He's incredible, especially if you love Kirby, like from the Fourth World Kirby that's in DC. This it just the line work, the backgrounds, the he just draws so much detail. It's
What's his name
incredible.
again?
Ledron. He is drawing for Jimmy Robinson again. And James Robinson, I guess I always associate him with Starman and the Superman run, and he's done a lot. One thing I know about James Robinson on the DC side is he does a lot of like Golden Age research and stuff. Like
Yeah, he does, yeah.
he puts a lot of effort into like legacy and where people came from, and he's got like a love for like first issue comics, so he'll throw in Atlas in his Superman run and all the different characters that appeared in first issue special that no one cared about. Agent Assassin, all these crazy characters, he show up in his Superman run. But he writes a heck of a good Cable, like a really good Cable. It might be like some of the best Cable I've ever read. But I don't know if this is the first appearance of this character, but you speculators should look this up. Irene Merriweather. She's a tabloid reporter, and I dig her a lot. But the first issue doesn't even have Cable until the end. It's all about Irene Merriweather. And she works for a tabloid magazine, kind of like the National Enquirer, and they like are positioned underneath the Daily Planet. And what I mean by that is, as she looks out her window, she could see the Daily Planet, and she always dreams like, that is my dream job. I want to be a legitimate reporter. I'm tired of this crap that we put out. And while she's regretting like her life choices and why she can't get into the paper, she's tried. She's applied at the Daily Planet many times. At the Daily Planet, the God, the what the hell? What universe am I in? I'm not DC. Where J. Jonah Jameson works. That's the why Daily Bugle. Thank God, man. Old age is really kicking in. It overlooks the Daily Bugle, and she always wanted to work for J. Jonah Jameson, become a legitimate reporter. And she sort of hates her job or regrets it, but she likes doing reporting. And her boss calls her in. He used to work at the Daily Planet until he screwed up and he had to start his own paper as a tabloid reporter. But he's a tabloid reporter now, the editor. He calls her in and says, "Look, who's this redhead hottie that has her arm around Sebastian Shaw?" And Sebastian Shaw should ring a bell for a lot of X-Men people, because he's one of the head of the Hellfire Club. And she goes on, so she goes on this reporting gig to try to uncover who the redhead is, but she's really uncovering the relationship between Donald Pierce and Sebastian Shaw, and she's uncovering some dirt. She finds a caterer who remembers a conversation between Sebastian Shaw and Donald Pierce, and they're talking about the assassination of someone from the future. And she's like really interested. She's like, wow, I could really create a great story about these characters, and it doesn't have to be gossip. This is all true. I have witnesses and everything. And she goes about this and then wants to meet with this caterer again to get some more information. She goes to the caterer's house and she finds blood everywhere. The caterer is now dead. And she's like, holy crap, I'm in over my head. Something's wrong. I'm going to go back to work and tell my editor what's going on. She goes back to work. 50 bodies on the floor. Everybody's dead. The editor, all her friends are reporting. Everybody's slaughtered. And then, I don't know what. I even tried to Google this because I've seen these goons before, but the Hellfire has these goons with like these masks, and
Yeah.
I don't know what they're called. Do you know what they're
What the
called?
goons are called? I don't
Yeah.
know if they really have a
But
specific
they
name.
remind me of a lot. They remind me of like Professor Pig's doll characters, where they have like these faces. They almost look like they're being controlled. Like,
Yeah, I don't think. I think that's just the how the mask looks.
yeah, but they look like they're not like controlled. The way they're written, like they're being controlled by somebody else, like the White Queen or somebody or Sebastian Shaw. They, 'cause there's this character named Taff that comes into it later. But these guys have her in her sight. They're gonna kill Irene. They're gonna kill her. But Cable comes to the rescue and saves her life, kills some of these goons, and they get away. And then in the next issue, he explains to her what's going on. That I guess Donald Pierce, this is the part I didn't know, because I guess he's sort of like a villain for Cable. And there's a cool splash page drawn where it shows Cable in the past, drawn with Donald Pierce, who looks like he's trying to take over like a foreign land, and he looks like he's wearing like Nazi gear. It's crazy. And then Iron Man's in the background. So it's like their whatever their relationship is, it's gone back into the past. And there are some beautiful panels, but he tells her what's going on, what they need to do. It sort of leads to like apocalypse. So this series is going crazy based on a tabloid reporter. But while that's happening and he's explaining to her what's going on, the Paladin drops in with a bunch of those goons that I'm talking about. And one of those goons seems to know Cable, and Cable seems to know him. And that's where I got the impression that these goon guys, from the Hellfire Club, were being controlled, because it didn't look like this guy Taft was in control of his own body. And then when Cable's trying to talk to Taft, and I don't know who this Taft character is, he like swallows the pill and dies, like he kills himself. So now Taft is dead, and he defeats the Paladin, which is weird because I never thought the Paladin is a bad guy. Like, he appeared in Civil Sable, he appeared in Spider-Man. He's a mercenary, but I didn't think he'd go after people to kill people. Well, in this case, he was trying to kill Irene. But Cable defeats the goons and the Paladin. And there's a beautiful page where Paladin comes in, and you can see I posted it on Twitter, but you could see like what LeDron draws like. He draws like a very Kirby-esque style, and it's beautiful. So this is leading into something with Apocalypse and the Hellfire Club, and I'm like intrigued on where it's gonna go. I'm not sure if it wraps up in the next issue in 50 or what, but man, I'm loving Cable. And the fact that LeDron is drawing it now, I am just like in heaven because it every panel I could just like I could stare at it. You could say you read a comic book for like 10 minutes or 5 minutes, depending on how you're doing it. Well, this one takes me like 20 to 25 minutes because I get sucked into the art. Like, I'm in the panel and I'm like zooming in and I'm zooming out and I'm like, oh my God, look at this line work. I'm like loving every page. And I just wish there was more LeDron in my life. I love this Cable book.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's so fun. But that's all I have. Does anybody have anything else?
No, I had another one, but I'll save it for another time.
All right.
Yeah, I'm good.
Well, we can wrap this one up then. And you can reach Chris at MythMakingETC, Rob at Rob Krieger, and me at Mike Myers Brunch. We are at geekbrunchpodcast.com on Facebook. You can find us at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. And we'll be back next week with more Cable. No, or Deadpool. I don't know what's going on. Or Shadowhawk. I don't know what any 90s property I'll probably be on because I can't take myself away from it. I
It's
think,
important to enjoy what you're reading.
yeah, I don't know why the 90s was so with Valiant and Image and everything the way it was, but I think it had to do with stress. I really think I love the 90s because I was in college already, which is a strange time for somebody to love comics so much. But it was a true stress relief for me. Like there was nothing getting out of an exam or before an exam and just going across the street and going to the comic store and just looking at the rack and pulling stuff off. And while I love the Bronze Age like nobody's business, man, the 90s I just associate with I don't know, like an explosion in my head that was able to remove stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, you guys have a good lunch or brunch or whatever you want to call it, or dinner,
Yes,
'cause it's late for you. But
enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
oh, I will. I gotta do 50 pounds worth of bagging and boarding.
I'm still
Yeah.
waiting for Gerber to announced they shipped my last order. I'm all out of bags.
See, I'm never gonna. I ordered 2,000.
I ordered
I'm
200.
not gonna mess around anymore because it's just I always like to have supplies. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna call that comic shop today and say, "Did you get more drawer boxes? Because I'm down to my last 11, and I like to have at least 20 in stock because of the. I never know if I'm gonna fill like three short boxes in a weekend."
Yeah, especially like something like with what happened here.
Well,
It's get 2.5 weeks of stuff.
this one was a big box, and it actually was so bulky and 50 pounds, and I'm getting too old for that shit. I mean, it was hard to bring in the house.
Did you make Barb bring it in?
No, I brought it in, but I was crawling.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, I think the next one's gonna be bad too, based on the circumstances. But
Yeah, I'm hoping they
this one
stick
had
to
Superman Batman Generations by John Byrne. It was a hardcover. It had the Spawn Compendium, which was heavy.
Yeah, my God, I'm thinking about that, but like I collected Spawn up until 53, so I already own all those. I need them to do a volume two, and then I'd be in good shape.
Yeah. And then the Spawn universe is gonna kick off. Woo! We're gonna have 5 issues of Spawn a week, a month.
Yup.
That was good timing for you, Mike.
Yeah, it's weird.
Couldn't have come at a better time.
I couldn't because Savage Dragon and Spawn. I think that's what led me to Ninja Turtles was Savage Dragon, but yeah, it's good timing. Well, you guys have a good Sunday, and I hope you guys have a good, healthy week, and we'll talk to you in another 2 weeks.
You too, guys.
Yep, you too.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.